From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for June 7th, 2019. Checking the calendar. The singer-songwriter of the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, Gordon Lightfoot, is at the Pabst Theater this Sunday. Also this weekend, it's Pride Fest at the Summerfest grounds, and in Port Washington, it's Pirate Fest. Arg. Speaking of the Pirates, the Brewers play the Pittsburgh Pirates again this weekend, except this time it's at Miller Park. Okay, a recent study shows that you can have 25 cups of coffee a day without doing any harm to your heart. That's the good news. The bad news is the participants in the study haven't slept in a year and a half. And what this tells me is that I got out of the coffee business way too soon. And finally, the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, a minor league affiliate of the Brewers, are changing their name, but just for one day. For one day, June 20th to be exact, they'll be known as the Utter Tuggers. I mean, we are the Dairy State after all. The Utter Tuggers uniforms should go directly to Cooperstown. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Mark Amateus, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Well, the Dow finally snapped a six-week losing streak this week to significant gains. NASDAQ up 3.9% just for the week, a stellar 298-point advance. NASDAQ closed this afternoon at 77.42. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, the S&P Stock Composite 500 climbed 4.4% this week, a stellar 121-point advance to finish this afternoon at 2873. Meanwhile, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 4.7% this week, 1169-point advance. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 25,984. Year-to-date, NASDAQ back up now to a nice 16.7% return. S&P 500 is up 14.6 for the year, and the Dow is up 11.4. You know, Kyle, we had such significant problems in May. The market was down 6.6% on all these trade talks. You know, we were talking about the expression, don't fight the Fed, and all it took was favorable comments from the Fed to say that, you know, they were looking at the problems because of the trade conflicts, and they wouldn't be afraid to lower interest rates. And it was all but what the street needed to hear, you know, with the Dow climbing over 1,100 points for the week.
Yeah, and it's not just the, you know, U.S. markets that are responding to the Fed, but you look at the Australian Central Bank, you look at India's Central Bank, you look at what the ECB is talking about now. You know, rates seem to be the thing that's in the news cycle this week, and getting cuts from India and Australia, having the ECB mention that, you know, they'd be open to even potentially some more accommodative policy down the road, if, and especially if that's the direction the Fed heads here. I think, you know, it's all but apparent that we're going to get a cut here fairly soon. The market's priced that in, and it's now just a matter of time until the Fed actually acknowledges that.
Well, you and I were talking a little bit earlier today about, you know, more and more analysts think that the Fed could cut by 50 basis points, if not more, late this summer. Dramatic shift from late last year when, you know, everybody thought it was baked into the cake that the Fed would raise 3-4 times this year. Now we're looking at significant reductions. You know, Kyle, when you take a look at the direction for interest rates, you know, I'm compelled to say that, folks, what we're talking about is bad news is good news for stocks. The reason why the Fed's thinking about lowering rates is they're concerned, number one, about the global slowdown, number two, about perhaps a further deterioration in trade because of the conflicts. So that's the backdrop against the euphoria that the market experienced this week. So what precipitated all this was bad news. And I think it's always important to circle back to, you know, what precipitated all this, which was a growing concern that growth is slowing. We've been talking for a while now about a number of areas in China that are slowing that have nothing to do with trade. So it's wrong to suggest that resolving the trade issues will get everything back on track.
Yeah, and rewind for a second back to the, you know, the start of the year in January, where the Fed started to say, okay, maybe we need to pause on interest rate increases here. And then, you know, just a couple of months later in March, now they're talking about, okay, maybe this is where we'll end. Maybe this is kind of the high point for rates. And then in May, all of a sudden, for the first time, we really have some meaningful conversation about those rate cuts. And so interesting how quickly we've moved from an environment where, you know, global economic growth is such that we need to continue to raise rates, where the U.S. environment is enough to at least support rates where they were, to now all of a sudden in the span of a month going from, well, maybe we get one cut by the end of the year to potentially now two or three by the end of the year, and maybe one as soon as June. You know, I think maybe a little early to say that's possible. Market not fully pricing that in yet, but certainly by July, a 70 or 80% chance that we get that first cut.
Well, and Bob, you talk about bad news being good news. You know, we had a very weak jobs report today, and I think that just adds fuel to that fire to tell the Federal Reserve that, hey, if anything, you know, let's look at cutting rates. Kyle, you mentioned, you know, the timing of it. I think the futures market now is predicting a 70% chance of a rate cut at the July meeting, at the end of July. So, yeah, there's no question that the markets and investors are looking to the Fed and taking a cue from them. As far as what rate policy is going
to
be.
Well, Mark, I think it's important to point out that the Fed's now entering a quiet period before their meeting here later in June. And so we're not going to hear much more from Fed officials until the day actually comes that we find out what happens for June. And so, you know, I think probably what's priced in now is what we should expect. And, you know, potential for some surprise always, but, you know, you're not going to get any more guidance from the Fed. You're not going to hear any more about what the plans are.
Joel, let's bring you into the program. I was kind of amused by the fact that the economists were expecting 180,000 new jobs this month, this last month, and they only created 75,000. So, you know, they don't get to say that they were off by a scotch or a tad or by a hair, you know, off by a country mile.
That's right, Bob. And they actually took away 75,000 jobs that were in the reports for March and April. So the employment market is actually looking a lot weaker than anybody was expecting, and again reminding that you know we've had 104 straight months of adding jobs. That's a record, but there were weaknesses all around the board in the jobs report. Even the industries that seemed to be adding the most jobs were behind the pace that they were adding jobs, you know, the last year or so. And then looking at the we usually look at the employment numbers more than the unemployment report, which is based on household surveys. But that also might be showing some signs that we're maybe running out of workers, that we're running out of
people. So it stayed at 3.6%.
Yeah, it stayed at 3.6%. But if you dig down and there's the U6 rate, which kind of looks at the underemployment, and that's the lowest it's been since 2000, one of the lowest rates ever. There was another number on the labor participation rate among prime-age workers, which is 25 to 54, and that's, you know, near the highest it's been. So,
uh-oh, I'm not prime anymore.
that's just a definition, just a broad definition. But so there are some signs there. And again, this is just 1 month's report, so we have to keep watching to see what happens.
But you look at the broader picture, you know, and last year we averaged 223,000 new jobs a month. First 5 months of this year, we're averaging 164,000. So that's a pretty dramatic decline, you know, in the numbers of new jobs being created. If there was any good news in the report this morning from the Labor Department, that year-over-year wages are up 3.1%.
That's right. We've had 8 months in a row now where it's been over 3%. We haven't had that since the recession. On the other hand, it was the lowest year-to-year rate since September. So in those 8 months, that was the lowest. It was a 3.1% increase. But again, you have to look at other months coming up to see if that holds.
Yeah, very good point. I mean, you can't hang your hat on just 1 month's report. Kyle, when you take a look at oil down 20% since late April, generally not a good leading indicator.
Yeah, absolutely. Would like to see, you know, maybe global demand a little bit better to help boost oil prices. And yet, you know, I think it's interesting that the markets in May responded to oil in a very different way than they have in the past few years. That when you looked at, you know, oil prices falling in the past couple of years, it was
so like, why are they falling?
Yeah, it was a really good thing for stocks. I think the difference now is absolutely what you're saying. Back then, it was that, you know, we're creating new supply, we're finding new ways to drill for oil cheaply. I think now it's absolutely a demand issue, and so it absolutely gets to the why. And I think that's you know, something that, you know, as investors we should be pretty concerned about, is if global demand continues to be weak. You'll see it in things like oil prices, you'll see it in things like copper prices, in those industrial metals. You know, that's really a thing to continue to keep an eye on.
You know, and then to take a look at the 10-year treasury, just plunged. You know, it was trading early this morning to yield 2.07. I mean, not only is it the lowest in years, but, you know, we were quite a bit higher than that at the beginning of the year, almost 2.7%. So a fairly dramatic decline in the yield of the 10-year.
And unusual to see the tailwinds of falling rates at the same time that we saw the kind of rise in stock prices that we saw this week. You know, typically you see you know, falling rates at the same time that stock prices are falling. You know, your bonds get a little boost even as your stocks take a decline. And yet, you know, this week everything was making money and really indiscriminately making money. You know, I think that the 10-year responding a bit to the likelihood that the Fed cuts here, and stocks more broadly just responding to the fact that, you know, maybe the end isn't quite here yet, that the U.S. economy still appears on pretty good, a pretty good foundation, even if the economic data wasn't great this week. And so, you know, it'll be probably some changes between stocks and bonds as we go forward, but at least for now, it's been a good year for both, and especially a good week for both.
Well, the year on the yield on the 10-year is just not supposed to go down when the economy is strong, so it contradicts much of what we've learned over the decades. Mark, let's talk about valuations here for a minute. Valuations have come down in the stock market. We're now, give or take, at 16 times 12-month forward earnings. As recently as early May, we were at 17 times forward earnings. So at 16 times forward earnings, I mean, we're not all that far off of the 20-year average of 15 and a half times forward earnings. So we get to say that the market is fairly attractively priced.
Yeah, that's right, Bob. And the 10-year, I think, is 14.8 times earnings. So we're a little bit, you know, above that, obviously. But on the other
hand, that got skewed by the financial crisis where banks didn't really have earnings
right
for years and years. Yeah. So I think a little bit better to look at the 20-year number.
But no, you're right. Not that far off. Not something that would make us say, hey, we're just crazy high on our earnings, price earnings ratio. So, you know, if everything else falls into place, I don't think that's a point where investors say, you know, they're not going to invest in stock.
And Mark, I think important to point out that that's pricing in the next two quarters, which should be pretty flat for earnings. You know, if you're looking at forward earnings, you're looking at the next 12 months, and half of that is an environment where earnings aren't expected to grow very much. So as we continue to put some distance between ourselves and certainly this quarter and potentially the next two, that should make the comparisons a little bit easier to make. It should make forward earnings look a little bit better. And so as you're looking at price over earnings, you get a little bit easier comparison. It makes that forward PE come down a little bit if the price doesn't move at all.
You know, furthermore, I'm always struck by how accurate the stock market is as a forward indicator. I mean, think back last fall, stocks got hammered because the market correctly anticipated negative earnings for the first quarter. So we had a really nice rebound in the first quarter of this year. The market's correctly calling, in my opinion, a reacceleration of earnings in the fourth quarter of this year. So the market looks ahead 6-9 months in advance, and it's pretty uncanny how accurate the market usually is as a forward mechanism. We don't have a lot of leading economic indicators. So much of we talk about on this program are lagging. I mean, we can tell you what employment was like a month ago, but there aren't a lot of things to look at that tells you, you know, hey, what's life going to be like in October? So the market is one of the better ones, and, you know, I'm always impressed by, you know, when you get to look backward on it, how accurate the stock market really is.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not that the market doesn't ever get surprised, Bob. I think it's just that, you know, when you can price in over a longer period of time all the various ups and downs, the market looks pretty accurate.
Mark, as you know, economists are terrible at predicting recessions. Just really tough to do. There's so many variables. You know, I used the expression a bit ago of a sine wave. And, you know, economists like to connect the tops of the sine waves to ascertain direction. But if you consider that there's 41 developed countries, give or take, in the world, and they each have separate sine waves, you put them all on top of one another, and then you're going to tell me that you can figure out direction? So it's pretty hard. Economists, however, can tell you trend line. I mean, we all know that GDP in the United States was 2.9% last year. Give or take, it might be 2% this year. At best, it's going to be 1% next year. But we're starting to see more and more evidence that the economies are slowing, not only in the U.S., but overseas. Fed's Beige Book came out this week, showed modest growth in April and May. We've had retail sales and factory orders that have been declining. You drill into the Labor Department report this morning, and it was mostly services that added jobs. The durable goods area and manufacturing did not do well. Retail continues to shed jobs. I think I read almost 50,000 jobs were lost in retail just last month. That's a big number. So what's your take on the slowdown?
Well, you know, clearly it's a global slowdown. In fact, the World Bank just cut their global growth forecast for 2019 from 2.9 to 2.6%. But, you know, we could be in a situation where we're just going to kind of crawl along for a while at a low growth type of environment. You know, we talk all the time about how the things that scare us the most are the things that we just can't foresee. You talk about things like 9/11 or Saddam Hussein invading Kuwait. So, you know, those potentials are always out there. But, you know, I saw a piece of data this week that was pretty positive. It was a survey by the National Federation of Independent Businesses, and it had some real good responses from small business owners. Reporting rising compensation at historical levels, continuing to raise pay, add workers, and planning on hiring even more. So, you know, there's some good things out there that we don't maybe necessarily see all the time in the data that we look at. But right now, yeah, global slowdown and kind of just a low, steady growth environment.
It's interesting you brought that point up, because I read this morning after the Labor Department report came out that the vast majority of new jobs being created are with small employers. The small employers have increased their employment levels by 23%, I think I read, over just the last 12 months. So when you see jobs that are being eliminated, or you see companies that are not adding workers, it's the multinationals. And I think that directly reflects the fact that growth is quite a bit slower overseas than it is here in the United States. And a lot of small employers don't have anything to do with exporting. They're selling to people in Missouri and Iowa and Indiana. So I think that it's telling that, you know, you want to get a job, go apply to a smaller company, because they're the ones that are hiring these days. Hey, Joel, let's get back to you. Some other economic reports came out this week.
Yeah, a couple of other positive things that I saw this week. Were motor vehicle sales for May were up, and that was greater than the analysts had expected. And this afternoon there was a report from the Federal Reserve on consumer credit, and that showed that credit card use was up in April. And both of those get to the whole point of the role that consumers play in our economy. And you know, despite the things that we're seeing with the job report today and things that we're seeing on, you know, factory goods orders and the ISM manufacturing index, where those are more globally sensitive businesses that are, you know, reporting a harder time, we're at least seeing some positive news as far as consumers are concerned.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the program. We enjoy doing the show, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.